Everybody, my name's Kristen, and I want to welcome you out to week 8 of our client education series. If you've been tuning in so far, you've learned all about the defensive strategies to building a solid foundation to your financial house. And tonight, we're learning all about the details you need to understand the offense. Our host this evening has over 30 years of experience in the investment industry, and he lives in Midlothian, Virginia, with his wife and 5 kids. It's my pleasure to introduce the great Dean Francis. Take it away, Dean.
All right. Hey, thank you, Kristen. Welcome, everybody. I first of all, just want to congratulate you for being on here tonight. If you do the right things consistently over time, it really is amazing what you can do with money. And money is a tool that can really allow you to live out the life that you really, really want. Money is one of those things that if it's not right, it unfortunately can take its toll and have a negative impact on other areas of our lives, our marriage, our kids, just the way we feel about ourselves. But the more sharp that we become with those habits, those choices that we're making consistently over time, the more we excel in that area. And it's amazing. It really does impact how we feel about ourselves. It really can improve our marriage, our ability to speak life into our kids. I heard it said many years ago that what's important is not money. What's important is to have enough money so that money is not important. And I'll never forget when I first heard that, I thought, man, that makes so much more sense, because money isn't going to buy happiness. But if you don't have enough of it, it is a very painful journey. For those of you that haven't met me before, I am someone that made every wrong choice early on. My wife, Sarah, and I were just married. We got married at age 21, and no one had ever really explained to me any of these fundamental principles about money. And right away, on the honeymoon, we bought a timeshare. Before I knew it, in their first year of marriage, I think I racked up maybe over 2 years, but I probably racked up $30,000 of credit card debt. Anything that you could do wrong, I did. And I'm so thankful for people that I've met along my journey that made a difference for me, that really made things simple, broke it down, got me focused. And one of those people along the way, many, many years ago, was Roy Matlock. Roy Matlock, if you don't know, he's the host of the Money and Business Hour out of Nashville, Tennessee. And he has had an incredible, successful career teaching people the fundamentals about money. He's got a way of just keeping it very simple. The truth is, he's a walking encyclopedia on the topic, but he can break it down, make it very simple. And I am someone that learned a lot from him, but I've watched him literally have an impact. And this is probably an understatement, on tens of thousands of people nationally through teaching and coaching. And then, of course, has a very, very large client base of people that he has served for probably close to 34 years. And so he's also a great friend. And so it's my honor to be here with you all here tonight, and also my honor to introduce Roy Matlock.
All right. Thank you, Dean. And yeah, Dean and I go back a long ways. I got started in this business when helping people with their money when I was 23 years old, and I'm getting ready to be, my goodness, next month. You know how they say once you're 59 and a half, you can take your money out of your IRA without penalty? Here I am. I'm getting ready to be one of those people. I'm like, every time I keep thinking, I can't believe that. But yeah, that's what's going on. And tonight we're going to have literally some of the greatest learning that you're ever going to. I got so much stuff. I've been working all day on this stuff, even to make it better. And it's, you know, because I love teaching people. I really believe if you educate people, they can make good choices. And so what we're going to do is tonight we're going to do a quick review, and I mean quick, and then we're going to get into understanding investments in a way that you, I doubt many of you will have seen all the things I'm going to get into, but I really have detailed it down to where you're going to walk out of here and you're going to say, I can pick my 401k out. I understand what to do. I'm learning how to do this. Now you may still, you're still going to want to get some help, but you're not going to walk in there asking your buddy, where'd you put your money? And he has no idea. And you know what I'm saying? Or you put it across. So anyway, so we're going to talk through that. But, and then, I always like to break it down slow. I'm from Nashville. And so I talk slow. I remember many, many years ago, they were going to do a pilot. And for some of you, Dave Ramsey and I were on, we started a radio show here in Nashville. Never been on the radio. And the it became very popular right off the bat. And we had a television show company come to us, and they wanted to do have us on TV. And they kept saying, stop saying W. It's double U. And this lady said, it'll never make it. Double U. Write it out. Double and a U. And we're like, oh, okay. That's a W. Okay. All right. So that's how that thing started out. But the point being is this slow talking is going to maybe either lull you into learning, all right, or maybe put you to sleep. But anyway, we're going to talk about creating offense. So we go through five stages, all right, five stages. We accumulate money. We think about that. We protect it. Protect, manage, and accumulate when you're young. When you retire, it's all about protection. It's protecting against market volatility, protecting against running out of money, those kind of things. And so when you go through and you start looking at, and then finally you want to pass it on to your children and that kind of thing. So what we do is we go in a protection mode in a lot of it, and then we have this saving for the future where we're out there running and gunning and we get on the offense. And so these are the pieces that we go through. If you just are tuning in right now, we roll this. There's 12 classes, and we have already, we're at this understanding investment stuff. We went through a lot of these other things. Don't feel bad if you ask the person that gave you this link. They can also send you some replay links on getting you caught up, or you can just stick with us every week and make it happen. So we'll be getting into tonight in understanding investments, and we're going to college plans, savings, all this kind of stuff. So anyway, and so the key is you want to get you a financial plan. And the first step is we talk about a FIN number. That's the amount of money you need to save and accumulate so that one day you can live off of it. It's called do nothing money. And what you want to ask yourself right now, if I do nothing right now, how much money will I make? Well, you know, that sounds like a weird thing, but you know, 50% of America right now, if they do nothing, they make nothing. All right. But one day you need to be in a position where you can do nothing. All right. I know my mother's 96 years old, and we started when I first got in the business, they were retiring. I've been doing this 36 years. And so my mother, mom and dad were 60. And you know, my mother's been, she's still living 96 years old, and hadn't had to work for money for 36 years and doing great. Matter of fact, their net worth has continued to grow all during that time because they had some things going on. So let's say you wanted to retire in 30 years with $100,000 a year income in today's dollars. We're going to inflate it out. You got to make $243,000. All right. It'll be like $100,000. So then you come up, you put your FIN number in, we plug it into this little thing. And then guess what? We come back. We said, well, you need $2,624,000. If you get this certain rate and $1,421 a month at 9%, you get your number. Okay. So now you have a plan. So what you do, you find out how the plan works. Well, one of the things you need to know is that the seed you sow today will be your harvest tomorrow. We know that. Okay. We got to put it in the ground. And so what you have to be thinking about is always investing. And so there's three things to become financially independent: time, money, and rate of return. So if you have a lot of time, you don't need that much money. All right. You don't even need as big a rate of return. But if you have a shortage of time, okay, or maybe you have a lot of money and a shortage of time or a high rate of return, so what happens is you start plugging this in. You say time, rate of return, and money. How much do I have? Well, if I wait and I don't have a lot of time, I got to have more money. If I get a low rate of return, then I need to have a lot of time. But the bottom line is, the best thing would be, let's have as much time as we can. When's the best time to start? Today or yesterday or 10 years from now. Let's put as much as we can away and get the best rate of return we can, which will allow us to be able to do nothing quicker, right? How about that? And so you want to ask your rep to do this financial needs analysis. We've talked about it. It'll give you your net worth and you'll find out your FIN, and there's a lot of other things that go along with it. So Rule 72, we talked about that. What's the rule of 72? Well, let me give you an example. I had a question about how does inflation work? What is inflation? All right. So the rule of 72 can help you on not only understanding how inflation is, but also how your money grows. So the rule of 72 says take any interest rate, divide it into the number 72. It'll tell you how long your money takes to double. So if you get 3% on your money, that means in 24 years, your money will double. 3 and into 72 is 24. Now, that also means if we have 3% inflation, $10,000 today, 24 years from now, will cost 20, or a $10,000 car today will be a $20,000 car. And by 48 years into it, it's going to be $40,000. Now, why is this a big deal? Everybody's got 48 years. The money that when we leave this earth, we got kids, they got kids. So it's always going to be, there's always 48 years out there. So that's what happens at 3%. That's what happens with inflation. All you got to do is look back in time. You'll see how that works. Now, if you got 6%, I was positive when I first saw this, I would double my money, all right? But here's what happens. I don't double my money, all right? I double my money every 12 years rather than 24. So look what happens. Now it goes to 160. Now, if I were able to get 12%, look what would happen. It would go and it would double every 6 years. It'd be $2,560,000. So I got a question for you. You have three people. They started out, they've had their money sitting there. They're getting ready to retire. They're about retired. And one of them has got $40,000. And of course, if you've been investing $40,000 for 48 years, at 3% for 48 years, you're probably still going to do that. So that means 3% of 40,000, you get $100 a month. All right. I think about $100 a month. Now at 12%, you got $2,560,000. And so I would say you'd probably do the same thing. Just keep doing what you've been doing. And that's $25,600 a month. Okay, so let's see, 25,600 versus 100. That's 256 times more money at retirement. How about that? So if I'm living next to you and you say, well, how much money are you making? I'm doing pretty good. I'm making 256,000 more than you, right? What if you had a 256 times pay raise over your neighbor? I mean, yeah, you probably won't be a neighbor anymore, right? So what we do is we show people how to move from low rates to high rates. Next thing you need to do is you need to be paying yourself first. If you make a dollar, save a dime. Here's an example of $1,000 a month savings. You say, well, $1,000 a month. How do I save $1,000 a month? Easy. Get a part-time job. If you need to, you can drive Uber and do that. All right. And you go out there and you do that from starting at age 25, you have 4 million. You wait 1 year and the compounded didn't have cost you $400,000. You wait 5 years, it cost you $1,700,000. When people start worrying about it, you waited 15 years, that $1,000 a month cost you $3.5 million. And so the second thing is you got to remember it's a time, rate of return. All right. And then the last thing is you got to learn how to bypass the middleman. Now, the middleman is places like banks. So I'll give you another example about the way banks make money. You go into the bank, you loan them $100. You say, well, hold on, what do you mean loaning them? You know, what we do, we reach in our pocket, we walk in, and we make a deposit. So we loan it. We ask them to quote the two things that we're thinking. We're saying, number one, am I going to get my money back? And they say, absolutely, FDIC insured. If anything happens to our bank, it's insured. You're like, okay, I'm going to get my money back. Second thing, what are you paying? I mean, that's what you would do if you loan money out. And they said, well, I'll tell you what you do. If you leave $100 in here, our money market account is paying 0.1%. If you come back 1 year from now and you ask for your $100, we're going to give you $100 and one dime. How about that? You made a dime. Okay. You're like, whoo, you're a dime? Really? And so people go in there and they're like, yeah, sure, I'll throw that in there. And then you come back, all right, and you have $1,000 in there, and what do you make? You make a dollar, man, you're feeling great. Okay, you're making money, right? All right, so you make a dollar on $1,000, and then you go back in there and they say, we got a credit card here, we can give you, and you go out and you put $1,000 on your credit card. You forget the fact that you're really borrowing your own money, all right, because you put $1,000 in your credit card, have $1,000 in the bank. And they say, and you're like, now you're loaning, you're like borrowing from them. And they charge you $180, 18%. They borrowed your money for $1, loaned it right back to you for $180, with $179 profit. That's pretty good, right? Y'all agree with that? I would rather what? Own the bank. How many of y'all would agree with that? If you're out there, you can, you know, do that, do whatever it is. Yes, you would rather own the bank, or you might want to own a casino. You know, we go to Vegas and we say, well, I'm only going to lose this much money. So we determine how much money we're going to lose before we leave, right? Wouldn't you rather own the casino, okay, than loan your money? I want to own is what I want to do. So what we do is we bypass the middleman, go and own those things. But the problem is we don't know what to own. And that's what a mutual fund will do. It's called professional money management. And so we're given the basic. It's an opportunity for you together with many other investors to pool your money. So individual investors throw their money in a pool. They have a manager in there, one of these guys that knows how to pick funds and stocks and stuff like that. I'm going to tell you about some experience on that a little bit later. And they put in the global economy and they own things like Zoom stock that we're watching right now that we, you know, now it's a household word through before the pandemic. Nobody even knew had heard of it, but now it's just, hey, we Zoom people, right? That's what we do. And so why do you buy mutual funds? Well, you get professional money management, you get diversification. They're going to put it across everything. You got the ability to grow your money. You can start it for $50 a month. How about that? All right. So you can go for anybody can do it. I'll never forget when I opened my first mutual fund is in like 1985. And little did I know that when I put that first $50 in, it changed my life. How about that? Changed it. Changed everything because then I had it pulled out automatically and so on. I've been doing that forever. Just keep putting money in. It keeps growing. I get a statement. I'm like, this is cool. And then number five, it's liquid. Mutual funds, you can get your money back if you need it for whatever reason. Okay. Mutual funds make money three ways. They pay dividends. I'm going to show you what that means. They have capital gains. That's when they sell a company and they make a profit on it. And then they have some of them they just hold on to and they have capital appreciation. So, Dino, back to you.
Hey, well, first of all, Roy, I gotta say, I know you're doing a review for everybody tonight, but you just proved that you can talk fast.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean,
I got a lot of good stuff coming.
It really is, and I'm excited to hear you talk about understanding investments tonight because you're so good at it. But I just want to stop and just say, you know, I never stop getting excited about those compound interest examples. I mean, when you show the rule of 72 and you show what happens when you really put money away, it's really unbelievable. And I think, you know, I'm going to pass on something to everybody that, you know, I have found to be some of the greatest advice. Let me just tell you what Roy just said. Okay. Number one, how soon, if you're a younger person, you're just kind of getting started, how soon can you get to a point where you're putting away $1,000 a month? You know, I know that when I first heard that many, many years ago, I just thought, man, from where I was coming from, that just seemed like a lot of money. But the reality is if you focus on it and you're careful with expenses, you pay off your debt, you do the right things, you make more money. That's for, I think, everybody. That's part of the process. The number one wealth building tool we all have is the ability to earn income. We live in America. But I think the idea is as you grow your income, you've got to make it a priority that you're going to put that money away. It is, there's something magical that starts happening when you start putting away over $1,000 a month. I mean, it just, first of all, you feel really good about yourself, but it really starts to add up. In fact, I heard one of the best pieces of advice. If you said, Dean, if I could only give one piece of advice, you know, what would it be? Well, I heard it from a man who got very wealthy many, many years ago. And he passed this on. I heard him speak one time and he said, I would work as hard as I possibly could. This is what he recommended to people, to get $100,000 invested as soon as you can in your life. He said, what happens is once you get that first $100,000 kind of put away, there's that compounding effect that takes place now the rest of your life, and you're able to achieve things that are amazing. And you don't have to be making $500,000 a year to do these kind of things. You just have to be very focused with what you're doing with your money. Certainly I'm also a big one on giving, you know, I mean, make sure you're giving along the way. I know some people are like, man, I don't know, I don't want money to own me. Well, just, you know what, make sure you do some giving along the way. It always helps you, you know, feel like, hey, money doesn't own me, I own money. And that can be a positive, but set that goal, if you haven't done it yet, to get that $1,000 a month. How soon can you get to that? And certainly if you're already doing that, hopefully, you know, get to that $100,000, let the compounding of interest go to work for you. And so then, you know, the other part is of course, making sure you're investing in the right way, which Roy is going to get into tonight. So, all right, Roy, back to you.
All right. Good job. Hey, thank you, Dean. And I told my daughter, I gave her a big plug. I didn't realize that I was throwing it out there like this, but I was doing one of my radio shows and I said, you know, I taught my kids how to do stuff. And so she's 28 years old and I'm like, she's got a house and she's got an emergency fund, got $100,000, more than $100,000 in equity in her house, and has, you know, is fully funded her retirement plan and has a Roth IRA and doing all that kind of stuff. And, you know, she's got renters. Okay. She's got two roommates. It's paying her house payment for her. Okay, all this kind of stuff. And I thought, and then I was like, Emily, I just gave you I gave you like the great, and she's single, huh? What about that? I was like, I gave you the greatest ad around, but isn't that what you want to do? And I always tell people, get $100,000 as quick as you can. How do you do it? And if you're young, get it by the time you're 30. Now, how do you do that? You both work, you save one income, you live like nothing, on nothing for life. Hey, when I was coming up, we went to Goodwill. That's where we bought all my clothes, went to my suits when I was doing things. I would buy those and buy them used, and I bought used everything, and I cut all my costs. Bought used cars, bought used clothes, bought used VCRs back then. I bought used everything once I understood what was going on. So with that, now we're going to get into understanding investments. So
hey, guys, hey Roy, can I just make one more comment? Because what you just said right there really is a big deal. You know, I remember when I met you, I won't tell people how much income you were earning at the time, but you were really successful in business and your income was very significant. But when I met you, you were still driving a very old vehicle. Your suits, they were nice, but I think you still had a Goodwill suit in the, you know, in there too. Like, I mean, you had really practiced what you preached. You really, you know, the best wealth building tool we have is to grow our income. So you work very hard on growing your income, but you practiced what you preached. You put away a lot of money and during those years and, well, it's just worth it. It's just, you have to kind of resist the culture, but if you're willing to do it for a short period of time, you get to benefit the rest of your life.
Guys, you can sacrifice 2 or 3 years of your life. So let me give an example. Let's say that you got a combined income of $80,000. Well, we know you can live on 40. I mean, you're not going to be living it up. But guess what? You can live on 40, save 40 for 3 years. You got your $100,000. How about that, guys? I mean, that's like math. All right. And then you got that $100,000. If it gets 10%, it doubles every 7 years. Now you're making $100,000 just on your money. So what we're going to do now, we're going to go into what we were basically doing. Now I'm going to go into it and talk to you about all the different types of things. So if we look at a spectrum of mutual funds, we have the most aggressive funds. Okay. Now keep in mind, these are funds, not individual stocks. And then we have all the way to a money market. So if we start at the very, so the money market is generally people have that for an emergency fund. You've heard of U.S. savings bonds. Any bond is when you loan money. And so we call it becoming an owner, not a loaner. So what happens is bonds are more conservative. If you loan, like you buy a U.S. savings bond, okay? If a municipality borrows money, all right, I mean like a city, and they pay what's called tax-free bonds, okay? So the interest becomes tax-free. If corporate America wants to borrow money, like Exxon says, hey, we want to borrow some money, and they'll do that. So I always talk about there's good debt and bad debt, all right? The reason there's a bond market is because companies will go out and purchase, will issue bonds. They'll borrow money from the public and pay an interest rate. So you say, well, I go to the bank, I get 1% on my money, but I buy an Exxon bond and it pays me 4%. And you say, okay, I believe Exxon's gonna be around, I do that. And I buy that if I'm gonna do something for short, for more safe money. I could go into a high yield bond. That would be like owning an airline bond. You know, they have to pay higher rates because they could go under, or another way to look at it, a high yield bond or a junk bond, there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that they carry more risk and with it a higher rate of return. Then we go into a balanced fund. A balanced fund is gonna have some stocks and bonds, or there's some ownership and loans. And then we have a growth and income fund. That's your big companies that pay dividends. I'm gonna show you some of those in a minute. And then we have growth funds. That would be if our a growth and income fund would be Procter & Gamble or Exxon or something like that. A growth fund would be, would own Google, okay, it would own Starbucks. Then we have international funds, all right? They would own stocks outside the U.S. And we also, I didn't put on this chart, we have a global fund. A global fund would be not only in the U.S., but outside the U.S., whereas an international is only outside the U.S. So two-thirds of the businesses that are out there are companies that are outside the U.S. Just to give an example, we do business with a lot of companies that are non-U.S. companies, and we don't really think about Johnson & Johnson. All right. We do business with them all the time, and they're a British company, or we don't think about Nestle, right? That's a Swiss company. Or how about this? French's Mustard. I wonder where that came from. All right. French. It's a French company. So we have that. And then the aggressive growths would be the ones that are the Googles of tomorrow. Okay. They invest in small companies and stuff like that. So let's take a look at an aggressive growth way it's laid out. So the first thing we do when we're looking at a mutual fund is we try to find out what their objective is. So this is an aggressive type fund. This is a dynamic approach to growth investing. Seeks growth by investing in companies that can benefit from and exploit new technologies or provide products and services that meet the demands of an ever-changing, evolving global market. So what that means is that they're going to be in that. Now, let me give you an example. This fund that I was showing you has 18,000 millions in it and 6 portfolio managers. And you can see that it's got money in U.S. stocks and also non-U.S. stocks. Okay. Now, here's one right here. Here's a growth fund. Growth fund focuses on well-managed U.S. companies of any size with sound fundamentals that have long-term growth records and attractive future growth potential. So if you own this fund, 84% the asset mix is U.S. They've got 5.8% in non-U.S. And just to kind of give you a little idea, if you own a U.S. company, it doesn't mean it's only making money in the U.S. For instance, I'm using an Apple computer and I have an Apple phone, which is, so Apple's a U.S. company making money all over the world. All right. And so then they have a little bit of money sitting there and you can see this one has had a 10-year return of 12%. Okay. Now let's take a look at another one. Here's a growth and income fund. Okay. It says a disciplined approach to growth and income investing. You strict eligibility criteria to screen companies from a broad array of industries, strong balance sheets and consistent dividends. So what does a growth and income fund have? Has a dividend. If you look down here right now, it says 1.85, I don't know if you can see my thing there, percent 30-day yield. What that means is that if you put money in a growth and income fund, the dividend alone, every quarter it'll pay, and you're going to get 1.85% if the fund does not grow. It just sits there. No growth in the fund. It's strictly the dividends itself. And so you can see this one has had a 11.4% 10-year return. So what happens is And to give you an idea how big it is, this one fund has 101,000 millions in it. Okay? 101,000 million. So what that means is there's people from everywhere, okay, putting that money in there, and then they have that. Then we have global growth. And this one, you can see U.S. equities in the asset mix right here. It says 45% U.S., 46% non-U.S. Remember, I said a global fund. So a global fund does what? And this is a global fund that invests in small companies, a pioneer in global small cap investing. Small caps are aggressive. So what we're doing is they're looking for smaller companies of capitalization up to 6 billion, which is still big, but in the stream of things, it's not Amazon. But this one fund has 16 portfolio managers. Look at that. 16 different people that are managing it. So let me give you a little story about a portfolio manager. So I've had people ask me, they say, well, should I own some individual stocks? And I always tell them, yeah, if you want to lose some money, yeah, I mean that if you're, you know, really wanting to lose money bad, okay, they put a lot into some individual stocks that you're researching, because I know after being around this stuff that long term you can't outdo these guys. Now, short term you might get lucky, all right, but if you want to lose some money, I tell people to buy individual stocks. If you work for a company, no more than 10% of your money should be in your company stocks. Anyway, so long time ago, I'll tell you how long ago it was. I was checking in my hotel room and sit down in front of the TV, and O.J. Simpson was pulling in to the courthouse in downtown Los Angeles. And I was sitting in a hotel room, and I looked out the window and I got to see O.J. pulling in. So that's been a long time ago, 20 some, I don't know how many years ago, a lot, long, long time. And I sit in one of these mutual fund companies, and they were talking about how they choose companies. That's what these portfolio managers do. And so they said, first off, they brought in a portfolio manager or an analyst. And what the analysts do, they do all the legwork, then they give all the information to the portfolio managers. So they had this analyst in there, and he analyzed companies that are drug companies. That was his job. He was a pharmaceutical analyst. So when they introduced him, they said, well, let me give you a look at his background. He's a medical doctor to start with. So he became a medical doctor. Then he went and got his MBA from a big school. So now he's got his master's degree in business, and he's a doctor. So I would have to think he's a pretty smart cookie. What do y'all think? Pretty smart. So then he said, let me explain how we go about this, making a decision whether we invest in a certain drug stock. He said, the first thing we do is we go meet with the CEO and all the C-level employees that are running the company. After we meet them, we go out and talk with some of the employees that are working there to get kind of, you know, their culture and see what's going on. We then go over to research and development and check out what they got cooking. He said, then after that, we take those drugs that they're selling and we go to the doctors' conventions and we talk to the doctors, all right, and ask them what they're prescribing. And then we go check in on some patients and get some opinions of patients who took those drugs, how they're responding to the treatment. Then we take every single company and we rank them A, B, C, D, and E. And he said, we put the money in the ones that we want. And then before we do that, we call to our office up in DC just to get the overall feel in the political environment before we invest money in any of these companies. And we do this over and over and over again. How about that? And when we do that, we generally have no more than 3 to 5% of your money in any one company. How about that? All right. So that's how they do it. Here's an international. They invest outside the U.S. It's 2.4% is in the U.S. The rest is all outside the U.S. We have a balance fund that's going to be stocks and bonds. If you look, it says 51% U.S. equities, 7.89%, and then 28% in bonds. Okay, I get that. 50% basically the money is out of the market. It's got a yield of 1.67%. That means that's the quarterly dividend. And it's had a 10-year return of 9%. And this one has 141,000 millions. And I covered up the fund because we're not making fund recommendations on here tonight, but I am giving you an idea of what goes into figuring this stuff out. And then you have bonds. Here's just one example of a corporate bond fund, total return focused strategy, seeks to generate most of its returns through income and invest 100% of its money in U.S. dollar denominated investment grade securities. Investment grade meaning that they're AA, AAA investments, okay? There are no junk bonds in there. And they do that. You got U.S. bonds and non-U.S. bonds, and it's in there, okay? So it's got a 1.65% yield on it, okay? 1 year return, 9%. How about that? And so then they show the portfolio managers. And so in this case, it's showing the number of years of experience of these different managers with the fund, the number of years with this particular group, and the total number of years of investment experience. And that's one fund, 11 managers. And you can see they've got years of experience. And if one manager were to die or retire, they've got 10 others that pick up the slack. So that's how they do consistent returns. So now what we're doing is we're starting to learn about all the different places we can put it. Now, what you just saw is something that is happening to you. 70% of the population has access to a 401k. So what that means is that inside of this, you're going to have things called mutual funds and choices, and they're going to have everything from a money market account all the way up to an aggressive growth. And let me tell you, give you a little stat here. If you mess it up in a 20-year time period, you mess it up by 0.5%. You just don't have it in the right places. And let me tell you what the wrong places are. The wrong places are too conservative. The wrong places are too aggressive. All right. If it's too aggressive, you may pull out. If it's too conservative, you don't make any money. So where you fall, we'll talk about that in a little while. But the point of it is that one mistake of 0.5% over a 20-year period is 5 years of retirement income. If you make a full percentage point mistake by not having it the right way, it's 13 years of income, okay, that it's going to cost you. So let's talk about the three Ds. A good way to keep your goals, you focus on the three Ds. Dollar cost averaging, that's what you're doing when you're investing on a regular basis, discipline and diversification. So let's take a look at what dollar cost averaging means. So what we do is when we're dollar cost averaging, we're really wishing the market would go down for a little while.
Hey Roy, real yeah. quick, before you go to dollar cost averaging, can I jump in real quick?
Jump in, dude.
One, just for fun, what is 141,000 millions?
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. Okay. I'm still trying to do the math.
I think it's 104. I think it's 140 billion.
$1 billion just in and again, when you were showing that, that's just in one mutual fund. Some of these are very just really great quality funds. I think the other thing I just wanted to kind of just make a note of is you're showing. You know, mutual funds have had some pretty long track records. And even including this recent stock market crash, you're seeing in the last 10 years, the real potential of averaging 9 and 10 and 11.
Yeah, and that was, I ran this, I pulled these numbers today.
Yeah, I noticed they were dated very recent, or I guess as of Friday maybe, but they're very current. And I think it's just, it's a reminder how, although these things go up and down all the time, you know, if you hold them over time, they really do. They achieve the returns we talked about in the compound interest. And then the other thing, in case anyone wasn't paying attention to this, it was kind of a little bit on the expenses. There's a very small expense built in. And what's cool about that is that the better the mutual fund managers do, the companies and so forth, the better the representative. The representatives are paid out of this. So, but the better that these do, everybody is rewarded. So the client is obviously rewarded, but the mutual fund managers, the representatives, everybody who's involved wants the money to grow. Everybody benefits from that little 0.8%, you know, those kind of things. And The only reason there's a little difference in those annual expenses is because some of the mutual funds do require more effort than others. And so you see a little bit of differentiation there, but it really is interesting how this industry is actually, it's just taking a little bit off the top. You know, we all get to invest in all these companies. We get to own all these stocks, be diversified, but we get professional management and everybody wins. It really is a terrific concept.
Very good. Yeah. And, you know, guys, when you look at this, you know, what we're doing with dollar cost average and diversification, discipline, all this kind of stuff, that's where we come in. I tell people this, that we're going to be around when you start making some of those emotional decisions. And that's what we do as a company. We help people make good choices, especially when we have volatile markets. So like right now, you know, we've had some dips. If you were in your 401k, you've been buying on the dip, all right? And then you held on to it, and guess what happened? It came back up, and that's really what happened. So in both examples here, you said, which one would we rather have? We're investing monthly. Investor B makes more money. And the reason is they are buying, and they made money on all those shares. And so it automatically allows you to purchase more shares at a lower price, less shares at a higher price. It's called dollar cost averaging. Now I'm going to show you a little hypothetical. Okay. So what you can do, you can get with a investment person, all right, and they can show you a hypothetical. And so what I did, I ran one right here, and I ran it last 18 years. And this is an actual fund that I covered up again. And this shows a $10,000 initial investment. It shows the fees going in. And then it shows putting $500 a month away. All right. So over that period of time, and then, so what we do, our goal is to create an income stream of do nothing money. So this thing may be a little hard to see, but I'm going to give you an example. So a $10,000 investment in 2002 and $500 a month all the way up to 2010, total investment, $57,000. Then what we did is we set up an investment withdrawal plan where you got a do nothing check. Okay. So now what happened is over the next 10 years, you were able to pull out 54,000. So you put 57 in and pulled 54 out. You think, well, what's going to end up happening? If you look over to the right-hand side at the bottom, what you're going to see is you're going to see that there's $119,000 left after pulling almost all of the amount of money that you'd put in. That's an example of the way a mutual fund works. It shows you where the dividend income came in. It shows you where they sold some stocks and made some gains and stuff like that. And so you can have someone help you do that. The other thing is you want to spread your investment out, because all these different colors represent international or bonds or big companies or all this kind of. So if you look at all that, what happens is by diversifying, you have more safety. You're always right once. All right. Something's always going to be right by diversifying. So what we're going to do now is I'm going to show you some examples of a fund. Okay. This is the geographic breakdown. Look at that. All right. It's all over the world, United States, Europe, Asia, and all that kind of stuff. So it goes in there and shows that. Okay. So they put your money across all over the place. Then what they do is they put it across all different types. Okay. Of technology. All right. And you can see information technology, industries, communication, healthcare, consumers, industrials, financials. This is one fund. And then this shows some of the top holdings in there. And I don't know why this covered up. I was going to show you how much that they have in there. But anyway, the point being is that when you put your money in a mutual fund, they diversify it across sectors. They diversify it across companies, across industries, and across countries. How about that? So they do it all over, doing it that way. So with that, what am I going to do? Dean, you want to recap now? You want me to keep rolling?
You can keep rolling, because I probably just interjected right there. But it is fascinating when you just think about the fact that everything you're putting in front of us right now, the diversification, the professional management, the opportunity to really own quality stocks, and just a small percentage kind of coming off the top, making it all available. It's really excellent. And of course, the whole dollar cost averaging that you did talk about, what I've always seen is that those who dollar cost average actually do a little bit better. It's interesting because of that, you know, like you said, I mean, you're at times you're buying lower when the market's going down. And in those times, like this year was just a terrific year for anyone that was putting money away on a regular basis, because a lot of those months you bought those shares so much lower, and then over time they start coming back and you do better. Dollar cost averaging really is just that consistent monthly putting money away. It's powerful. I'd also have to say, you don't notice the bumps as much too. You know, it's kind of like, so we said today, you know, you want to get 100,000 put away as quick as you can. The only negative to that is once you notice that you're over 100, you're going to be really disappointed when it falls back to 85 or 90, or, you know, those bumps that kind of occur. But when you're putting in that money monthly, you don't feel those bumps as much. In fact, you ought to be excited when that market goes down because everything is on sale. So anyway, just adding in a couple, 2 cents on that.
Absolutely. And we got a question. A 401k is like in Canada, you have your company sponsored retirement plan, and similar to an IRA or an RSS or RSP, I think is what they call it for all of you Canadians there. So how do we go about meeting? You know, if I meet with somebody, I always tell people, so I'm going to give you an example of the way I choose things and help people make recommendations. I look at their overall balance sheet. So if you were to sit down, we would look at what you have, what you owe, how much emergency money you have, all this kind of stuff. So we're building that up. I'm then going to look at the time left before you're going to need this money. So how long can you leave it in here? So for instance, if you come to me and you've got a 16-year-old, and you want to put money in for a college, it's got to be like more than likely I'm going to tell you, let's just put in a money market account, because in 2 years you're going to do it. But if you've got 18 years or you got 15 years, depending on how long it is before you use it, I'm going to look at the cost factors involved. And I like to look for funds that have low expense ratios. And to give you an example, some of the funds we just showed you, they're operating on 0.8%. So that means 99.2% of the gains you get. Okay. You get, I mean, they run these things because there's so much money. They spread it over so many different people. Then we'll look at your risk tolerance. You know, if you're just coming in to investing, okay, I'm going to treat you differently than someone that's been doing it a long time. I had a buddy of mine not too long ago when the market took a tank. He came to me and gave me $100,000. He says, and he's been investing money. He's like, man, I'm going, he said, I want to put it all in. And he did. So we look at your investment experience. Because what I want to do is I want to put you, you know, it's kind of like I want to put you in something that you're going to sleep well at night. But at the same time, I don't want you to be so conservative you don't make any money. I don't want you to be so aggressive that you end up getting scared. And so that's when we meet with people, we talk with people, and we do our research. We look at ratings. We do all that kind of stuff. There's 9,000 mutual funds out there. All right. And so which one are you going to put in? We do all that. And then we create you a portfolio. All right. And a portfolio could be made up of a number of funds, that kind of deal. So here's an example of a rating called Morningstar. So I'm looking, I said, well, here's a company that has got below average risk, but it's a 5-star rated fund. I mean, doesn't that make better sense than to have somebody that's have a fund that's got low ratings and high risk? I'd rather have low risk and high ratings, right? So that would be an example. And these are every single fund out there has ratings. So we look at that. We look at risk measures. There's all these different types of risk. But what basically it does, it says, how is it doing relative to the market? Well, if you're taking market risk, you want to get at least market return, right? Now, what if you could get less than market risk, but have more than market returns, right? So there's things like that. So we look at those things, all right? So then here's an example of a portfolio. Now, this is one example of a portfolio, all right? Look at it. This fund, it's got what? 1, 2, 3. It's got 8 mutual funds in it. Isn't that something? So remember each fund I was showing you, it has 8 of them. And each one of those has 8 or 10 managers. And they put it, each one of those funds are invested across all these different things. This one right here is a global growth portfolio, is what that is, all right? Here's another one. This is something that you have at your work called a target date. So a target date, I wanted to show this. This target date is a target date 2020. If you look, now that you know what a stock and a bond is, It's got 33% U.S. stocks and 11% non-U.S. stocks. It's only at 44% stock. And then it's got the rest of it is in bonds. Now, why is that? Because these are people that are retiring now, right? So when they're retiring now, it's more conservative. You know, the most important thing, if you ever get financially independent, is never not be financially independent. So if you've saved your money, we don't want to go out there and put it in aggressive growth funds and then that kind of thing. I had a couple talk to you last week, and I told them, I said, look, you've won, okay? You've won the game. So what we need to do now is make sure you're always winning, right? Now, if you get somebody that's out in the future, okay, this one has only got, it's about 80% stocks because it's somebody that's not going to be retiring until 2050. So this is something I always tell people, target dates are very important there to your investing. If you have 401ks and stuff like that, what I always say, target dates are a good place. What about fees? Well, there's three ways you can buy. You can buy a mutual fund called a no-load mutual fund. You do it yourself. There's no front end fee. It's the lowest cost if you have the knowledge and temperament to do it. I very seldom talk to people that do that because the ones that do that, they don't call me. All right. They do it on their own. I always tell people, I say, look, you know, everybody, there's a Home Depot for everybody. There's a backyard mechanic. And most of the time though, my experience has been, I stick to the things I'm good at. You know, that's what I try to do. But if you want to do it on your own, hey, this could be part of the way you do it. But most people, what they want to do, they don't want to pay a ton of money, but at the same time, they want to get some help. So you could go in and do a brokerage commission and you pay a front end fee. But if you stay in that one mutual fund company, it's the lowest cost if you buy and hold. And then there's another one you may have heard called a managed fund. And what it has is the no front end fee, but it's got a quarterly management fee. It's the highest cost, but it's got with flexibility, you can change funds. So what you do is you say, well, if I feel comfortable, I've got a decent amount of money, I want to put it in there and leave it, I'm happy with this fund group, then your best bet's your brokerage commission. Now, if you want to have it where you move around and do this and all that kind of stuff, then you might go with a managed account. But the bottom line is there's cost involved. This, all of these funds, I don't care if it's managed account or any of them, has what's called an expense ratio, all right? And that expense ratio is how the funds pay their employees, the fund managers, all the record keeping, that's what they do in order to be able to pay us as well. And it comes out of that expense charge. And then if you buy a brokerage account, you're going to pay a fee up front. So in the case with this shows an example. If you were to buy less than $25,000, you pay a one-time fee on a growth fund or growth type funds of 5.75%. But look, if you've got $1 million, you pay no fee up front. All right. And so what happens is all of this is laid out when you meet with someone. They'll teach you how the funds work, show you their recommendations, and you'll get to find out all the cost involved. Managed account fees look like this, based on the size of the, you know, if you've got 5 million or more, all right, you're going to pay very little in the managed accounts, about 50 basis points or about a half a point. But if you're a typical investor, you're going to pay about 1% to the management company and another 0.5% on top of that. So it's probably about a 1.5% average fee. So with that, what I'm going to do, Dean, because we'll both jump in here. I'm going to finish up with and just say thank you for attending. If you need anything and you want help about what we've covered tonight, or if you have questions, whoever sent you this link, ask them to just reach back out, set an appointment with them. They can do a Zoom or whatever. They can also send you some of the prior replays. Also want to mention this, if you want to watch this again on Thursday night, it'll replay again. They can also send you just this one to be able to do that. If you have a friend or family member that would benefit from the information, maybe they're at or near retirement or they're wanting to get started, just forward that link and invite them out to one of these and pass it on to the person. We love working referrals. It gives us time to spend our time working with you, helping you with your money rather than trying to find new business. And so if you know someone, we appreciate your referrals. And then Dean and I are going to be sliding out in just a second, in a few minutes. We're going to be starting our work from home solution. So if you you're thinking like, now, you say, man, I like this, I'd love to learn more. And also might want to make a career change. If the pandemic has done something, you know, to either hurt your career, eliminate your career, or you're concerned about it, this might be an option where you can get in a professional business helping people and so on. So what I'm going to do, Dean, it's all yours. Finish up anything you got. And guys, thanks for coming out. We have, let's see if there's a Q&A here. Is there anything here that ask? If you can explain beta, I'll make a quick beta. What is beta? The stock market, the U.S. stock market has the S&P 500 has a volatility of 1.0. What that means is that if you have a beta of 1.0 and you have an investment that follows the stock market, the ups and downs would follow the market. So you have a 1.0 beta. Now, if you have a 1.2 beta, that means it's 20% more volatile. So it would be like this. In there. So the way I always explain it is this, it's risk and reward. If you, if I told you this, I said, look, I'll pay you $1 million to walk across the interstate. And you say, all right, I'll do that. No, there's one more catch. You got to do it blindfolded. You'd say, that's too much risk for $1 million. You say, I got another option. If you'll walk across the interstate, I'll give you $100. How many people are going to take the $100? All right. So they're going to take the $100 because the $100 is safer. They're willing to take that risk. All right. You got occasionally some people who will say, give me the $1 million. And then they get slammed. Right. So what we try to do is find things that have lower than market beta, but outperform the market. One more question. What's the difference in a 401k and a 403b in the States? 403b is from a nonprofit. It's similar. Except it's from nonprofit hospitals, school systems, municipalities have 403Bs, and corporate for-profit companies have 401Ks. Dean, anything else?
No, I would just say if you are not yet saving $1,000 a month into some mutual fund, get there as quick as you can. Push yourself, challenge yourself. If you are one of those people that have already accumulated money, just have somebody, just make sure someone looks at it from time to time. Hopefully you've got a professional relationship. Maybe you are already one of our clients. Take advantage of us. It is free. You can say, hey, can you just look at my account again? Now we're usually looking at your active accounts with us, but you might have something through your employer and it doesn't take us long just to look at it. Let's see if there's anything, that might be worthwhile. The two mistakes I find is sometimes people are too aggressive or they're just too conservative. You're 25 and you're just being too conservative. You need to kind of let it rip. You got a long way to go, but now you're getting close to retirement. Well, you don't want to be quite as aggressive. You might want to be a little bit more careful. So take advantage of that professional relationship that you have with somebody from here. It can make all the difference in the world. Thanks for being here.
Right.